Amen. Good to see you this morning. Glad you're here. I'm glad you found it. Have you noticed that we don't have a sign on the front of the church? It's been painted over, and hopefully we'll get a sign going back up there. And just so that you'll know, we'll be talking more about this later. This has been called what, Briarcliff? And it's going to be called Briarcliff Church. Why is that? One is that we're not a funeral home. The chapel, but we think that and we'll talk more about this later, but church is a more biblical, usually chapel is a place, and we're more than it. We're not just a place, we're a people. The word for church in the New Testament is ecclesia, which means a called out group of people for a mission. So we are a called out people with a cause. We're called to a cause. Now, we could have put, and I thought about this maybe, have you ever seen those stores called Come and Go? Would you have been all right just to put on there Come and Go? Is that not what most people or many people think of church? You just come and go, come and go. And if you're already full from last week, then you say, well, I don't think I need it this week, so I could just go on by. But then you feel like, oh, I need to go get my tank filled, so you come and go. Well, church is not come and go. This is not come and go. Just in case you know, this is not come and go. It is a church. We're called out with a cause. What's our cause? What is our cause? Just to remind you, we've been tossing this around a lot, trying to nail it down in a very concise way that we can remember it. So can you remember three words? Just three words. And it is share, grow, and serve. Can you say that? Share, grow, and serve. We're to share the gospel. We want to lead people to follow Jesus. We want to grow in community. And we want to serve people in our church and outside of our church. That is our cause. By the way, we've said this quite a bit, and this is not our cause. This is more like of our culture. This is a place where everyone is welcome and nobody is. And anything is, y'all getting weak in that. Do you know that? This is a place where everyone is welcome. Good. Sooner or later, welcome. And nobody is, everything is. That's kind of our culture that we want to develop here. But our cause, don't get the confused, our cause is to share the gospel, lead people to know Jesus. And it's to grow in community. And it is to serve others. Well, Paul here, and we're getting down to the last chapter in our study, so if you're rather new here, we've been working through Philippians, and all of our small groups are studying this together. And Paul is down to this last part. He's still giving them kind of encouragement, keep on, keep on, keep on. And you find the term, stand firm, keep on going. So let's start with verse 1. He says, therefore, my brothers whom I love, I long for, my joy and crown. That's why you should stand firm, stand firm. If you have your Bible, just underline those words, stand firm in the Lord, dear friends, stand firm. There's no people that Paul loved more than those people at Philippi. It's a beautiful story of how that church started. And his love for them, he never got over the love that he had for them. And it's interesting, this word love here is not just a friend kind of thing. It's a sacrificial, it's agape kind of love. He said, I love you with an agape. It's a self-sacrifice to meet the need of somebody else. And so this love that he had for them was a sacrificial. You understand that you make sacrifices for your children. We sacrifice for that which we love. And we want to do that. We're glad to make those kind of sacrifices. Most of you that are parents have made sacrifices for your children. I got to think about the sacrifices that my parents made for me. And many times was not fully aware of the sacrifices they made for me. I remember when I sensed that God was calling me to the ministry. And my dad had such a big dream for us. I'm an only child and raised in a general store in South Missouri, as you know. And my dad had in mind and we started buying up other general stores around the line. And I've said many times jokingly that if God had not called me to the ministry, you'd never heard of Walmart. It had been A-Mart, Armitage Mart or something like that. But that's what my dad had in mind. And we're starting to buy up. And he even told me, he said, son, if we're going to make it in this, we're going to have to be a large volume dealer. And so that's kind of the direction we were going. And I knew that if when I would tell him, I feel like God's called me to the ministry, I thought, Lord, that'll break his heart. And I remember that in the service, I didn't even know this till later. I talking to my pastor, and he told me, God was so dealing with me throughout the summer, and I wrestled with that, and I did not want to be in the ministry. The last thing I wanted in all the world was to be a preacher. I was in high school, you know. What beautiful girl in high school is going to date a preacher, you know? I want to be a basketball player and something else, but not. And so it was an August, hot August evening, no air conditioning at that little old country church. I went forward at the close of the service an invitation and told my pastor, I think God's called me in the ministry. I did not know till later that he was telling me that during that invitation, my dad had slipped down to the front. And he asked my dad, why are you coming? He said, I do not know. I just feel like God wanted me to come. And he sat down. I didn't even know that. And then I came. And my dad, I'll just tell you, very willingly sacrificed his dream. He'd been working toward that dream. He willingly and even cheerfully sacrificed that dream. Now, when Paul says, I love you at Philippi, I love you. It was that kind of sacrifice. I'm willing to make any kind of sacrifice for you because we're together in a cause. And my dad saw a greater cause than Walmart. He saw a cause of the gospel, and he cheered me on. That's the sentiment that the Apostle Paul had for these people. He said, you're my joy and my crown. You're my joy and my crown. Then he challenges them, stand firm. Stand firm. Don't waver. Don't get off course. Stay the course. And then I got to thinking this week, Charlene and I were talking about the number of people over the years that we've seen that they'd get so on fire for God and then seem like the fire would go out and you don't even see them in church anymore. And what causes that? What causes that? And I got to thinking, in fact, I did some research and did some study on why people drop out. Why did they not stay the course? Why did they not stand firm? Interesting that I found some common denominators in that is one, is that one survey said one of the reasons why people don't stand firm and they don't stay in church and all that is they never did find Jesus there. They found religion there. They found music there. They found other people there. They found a crowd there. But they never did really find Jesus. Oh, I thought, I hope that never is true for Briarcliff. The people always sense Jesus is here. But then the other thing, watch this now. They didn't find Jesus or they didn't find a good friend. Have you found a friend here yet? See, that's what we're always wanting you to find is a friend. Some of you have because you sat in the same place every time and you've gotten to be friends with the person you sat next to. But we want that friendship to go even deeper than that. So we want you to find Jesus and find a friend. But the other reason that many leave is because of conflict. There's either ways conflict within the church or they're in conflict with somebody in the church and they bail out. I want us to be a place where they can find Jesus and find a friend. But Paul said, and he was talking to people because there was conflict at Philippi, and he knew that that would distract them from what they really need to get accomplished. And so he says, I plead with you to help these two women, Euodia and Syntyche, to agree in the Lord, come to the place that they've come together. The disagreement, we don't know what their disagreement was about. But evidently it wasn't about doctrine, or Paul would have addressed that right up front. It was probably some sort of disagreement of something that likes or dislikes, and they had disagreed on that. I told Luke, I was talking to a guy the other day, it leads church music in a church. And what do many churches wrestle and disagree over? Music. Luke has an impossible job. He can never please everybody. Sure as he pleased somebody, somebody else is not pleased. You know? And those are not doctrinal issues. Those are preferences that we have here, and everybody has their own music. And this worship leader, he's in a rather small country church, and they're wrestling over a disagreement in the music. And those that want the hymn and the hymn book are still standing, they're standing firm, all right, but on the hymn book, you know. And then they're trying to, and so some of them tried to get it in the bylaws that they'd always have at least one contemporary song in the worship service. Let's go to the bylaws. Let's get it in there some way or another. You can see that? You think that church is doing anything for the Lord? Not a thing. So Paul saw that there was conflict. You don't know what it is, and we don't even need to know what it is. But he's calling for the yoke fellow, the leader of the church. And so it goes on in verse 3. He says, yes, I ask you, loyal yoke fellow, help these women who have contended at my side in the cause of the gospel. See their cause? Do you notice that? In the cause of the gospel, along with Clement also. We don't know who Clement was. It's the only time he's ever mentioned in the Bible. Along with Clement and the rest of the fellow workers or fellow yoke people whose names are in the book of life. What's a yoke fellow? Do you know what a yoke is? How many of you know what a yoke is? You've just announced your age, probably, of knowing what a yoke is. But they'd have a yoke, and the oxen would be in the yoke, and they had to pull together. There's real problems if one wanted to go one way and one to go the other. A yoke puts them together. And they are yoke fellows. They're working. It's two words. Working side by side is the idea. Working side by side. They're yoked in the same direction. There's synergy there. This word synergy is intriguing to me when you're yoked together. Synergy just means when you bring two components together, the sum is greater than the combination of the two. In other words, there's the best way I know, I read this a number of years ago and was so fascinated by it. In the Chicago World, World Fair, I think it was. They have tractor pulls today, but then it was horse pulls. And they had one horse pulling to see how much that horse could pull, another one how much. And the two winners, they thought, I wonder what will happen if we put those together as a team. And when they put them together as a team, they pulled a greater load than the sum of each one of them together. Now, where did that extra energy come from? That's synergy. When you yoke together. And so he says, I pray that all of you that are yoke workers or yoke fellows, that you'd come together and have that kind of unity. Now, how do you have that unity? How do you bring that common bond together? Well, he goes on this verse, is you focus on something. What do you focus on? In verse 4, it says, rejoice in the Lord always. I'll say it again. This is one of the most memorized verses in the Bible. Many of you have this memorized in some translation. You're just dying to say it right now. So let's say it together. Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, rejoice. Rejoice. A common bond that brings us together in this synergy is the focus on rejoicing in the Lord. Rejoice in the Lord. He says, I'll say it again. Rejoice in the Lord. I like what Tim Hensel says about this joy or rejoicing. Look at it. This rejoicing, this joy of rejoicing, it's different than happiness, which depends on circumstances. Joy defies circumstances. Isn't that interesting? Joy defies circumstances. It can coexist with doubt, ambiguity, pain. It is a contentedness beyond circumstances. An indestructible kind of confidence that says everything is all right, even when everything looks, feels, and tastes all wrong. That is the rejoicing. It's rejoicing in what? You remember? Rejoicing in... Are you with me? Rejoice in the... Rejoice in the... How often? Always. Rejoice in the Lord. Rejoice in... What does that mean, rejoice in the Lord? Rejoice in a relationship. Rejoice in... You have a relationship that is so meaningful, it brings joy. Where is your greatest joy in life? Is that not in relationship? So it says, let the joy of this relationship with Jesus cause you to rejoice. Watch this. The better you know Jesus, the better you're capable of rejoicing in the Lord. If you don't know Jesus very well, you can't rejoice. It's a very fictitious thing that you try to rejoice. The better you know Jesus, the better you can rejoice in the Lord. Never forget, the better you know Jesus, the better you can know how to rejoice in the Lord. I read of a farmer one time that had an apple orchard, and he invited one of his friends to come, and he said, I'll give you some of my apples. And the guy would constantly say, no thanks, I don't care for any. And finally he said, don't you? What do you have against my apples? And the guy kind of finally confessed, and he says, well, I must tell you the truth, I don't like your apples. They taste terrible, they're sour. And the owner of the orchard said, where did you eat any of my apples? And then he had to confess. He said, well, down by the fence line, down by the road, some of the apples fall over on that side, and I tasted one of them one time, and they taste terrible. And the guy began to laugh. And he said, oh, all of those trees down by the fence row have terrible apples. I put them down there to keep the boys out from getting in to steal my apples. If you come in the middle of the orchard, you'll find wonderful, wonderful, sweet apples. If you stand on the periphery of the church, come and go, then all you may see is bad apples, because there are some in the church. They call them hypocrites. And then there is the word sacrifice at times. There's the word commitment. And you think, I don't want to go inside that orchard. Because what all I'm experiencing now, that looks kind of bitter and sour to me. And Jesus says, come in. If you know me, you'll love me. And you will rejoice. I wonder if some of you coming goers have just been eating sour apples. And Jesus said, come on in now. I want you to know me. The more you'll know me, the more you'll be able to rejoice in me. Rejoice in the Lord. What's the next word? Rejoice in the Lord. Are you kidding me? All the time? All the time? What he's really saying here is let this be your nature. That it begins to be your nature just to rejoice in the Lord. And then he begins to describe some of this. Look at it in verse 5. He said, let your gentleness be evident to all. Let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is. What's the word gentleness? If we had this word gentle or gentleness, if that becomes kind of our nature, what does that mean? It means to be reasonable, not harsh or not rigid. It means to, at times, yield your personal rights. In our culture today, rights has become a big deal, right? I've got my rights. I got my rights. Everybody's crying out, I got my rights. In the ecclesia of the church, many times in a relationship with Jesus or others, you have to give up sometimes your personal rights. I've even heard that in marriage sometimes you have to give up personal rights. Is that true? Sometimes you have to give up personal preferences. It's not worth the fight. We got our Christmas invitations here in the printer, and I called the printer this week and hadn't gotten in the office. She's late. And found out why she's late when she came out and talked to her. And she said, oh, the dog got in fight with a skunk last night. And came back in, and we've been shampooing that shampoo and never could get the smell out, and took it to the vet and went through all that kind of stuff. And I remember that. I went back just to look up. You know, a skunk, by and large, will not fight. A grizzly bear will not tackle a skunk. Neither will a coyote, and neither will a mountain lion. But it said the most often animal that tangles with a skunk is a dog, and they'll even go back the second time. I thought dogs were smarter than that. A bear will say, it's not worth the stink. And they'll not fight. So it says here, have a gentleness, because there are some areas that it's not worth the fight. It's not worth. So deciding what is worth. And he says, not only that, but he said, the Lord is near. What does that mean, the Lord is near? It could be translated, the Lord is nearby. How do you behave as children when your parents are right beside you? How do you behave if you know that the Lord is right beside you? I've sometimes said to men, you know, the best way to really remain pure in your relationship is always keep in mind, just visualize always your wife right behind you with a ball bat, and it will help out a lot. The Lord is nearby. The Lord is nearby. Now, that also means the Lord is coming soon. But it's having that kind of thinking that there's a tremendous power in the presence of Jesus. There's a tremendous power in the presence of the reality of Jesus. And when you have that, it even begins to change the way you think. And look at the next verse that he says. And the way that you think, when you sense that God is here, what does that do in the way you think? Do not be anxious about anything. And I didn't feel like you need to know any more about that, so I just thought I'd skirt right on by that. Or do we need to talk about that for a moment? No, in our small groups, we asked for information about how would you like for us to address this message this Sunday, and that was on most everybody's. Let's talk about anxiety. Anxiety. All of us deal with it. What does the word anxiety mean? You know what it is. You just sometimes can't describe. The word anxiety really means, it's the same word translated many times as worry. It means divided. It's quite different than being yoked together. It means divide. It means to have a divided mind. It just means that your mind is going ever pulled in different directions. And when he says here, do not be anxious. He said, that's going to be a natural tendency, because our minds are by nature chaotic. You don't succumb to that. What he's saying is, do not be anxious. Don't succumb to that nature of being so. And Paul had a lot of reasons to be anxious. He was in prison. He's dealing with a church that had conflict. He could look out and see the Romans that were causing all kinds of grief, and also possible execution just around the corner. He had all kinds of reasons to be anxious, and he said, do not be anxious. Do not be anxious. So what do you do? There needs to be a focus. So what do you do with all of this anxiety? Divide. What can pull it together? What can pull it together? And he said, pray. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, in every situation, what do? You pray with petitions, thanksgiving, and make your request to God. Prayer means, first of all, to listen to God. We make a big mistake a lot of times when we start with prayer down here to God, when prayer really ought to start listening to God. Is that the way you pray? Your first step is, I want to hear from you today, God. We're by nature wanting to start down here, throw these things up to God. So first of all, focus on hearing God. Pray, pray, pray. Let Him speak to you. Let me tell you about Joseph Scriven, Irish boy, born young guy, 25 years old. He's getting ready to get married, and right before the wedding, his fiancée drowned in an accident. You can imagine what that did with his heart. Broke his heart. Finally decided to move to Canada. Started teaching school. Fell in love again. And just weeks before he was married, she became ill and died. He then became a preacher. That's probably the third bad thing happened. I don't know. Felt like God was calling him to preach. And then his mother back in Ireland died, and he couldn't get back there. He sat down and wrote a poem that you may be familiar with. It became a song. Look at it. What a friend we have in Jesus. All our sins and griefs to bear. What a privilege to carry everything to God in prayer. Now watch this next line. Oh, what peace we often forfeit. Oh, what needless pain we bear. All because we do not carry everything to God in prayer. I think Paul was singing that was before it was written, don't you? Carry everything to the Lord in prayer. Focus, he said, focus on that relationship. And then what happens? What happens when you focus on that relationship with Jesus in that way that brings rejoicing? And then what else besides just this joy of rejoicing? Look in verse 7. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds in Christ Jesus. Jesus told the disciples, in this world you'll have tribulation. In this world you will have terrorists. In this world there will be ISIS. In this world, there's always going to be tribulation. Always. There's never going to be peace in this world as we know it. Never will be. This word peace with God and peace of God, you notice that? This says peace of God. When he was writing the Romans, he was talking about peace with God. Let me just quickly look at the difference. Peace with God is our salvation. When God and mankind is at opposite ends of the pole, he came on the cross to die for us, to bring us together. The word peace is an interesting one. It's a Greek word, eirene, which means together. Keep in mind, peace means together. The peace with God is together with God. We're by nature not that way. He brings us together with God. But there it says, the peace of God. Still together. The peace of God is together inside, and that we have it together. Do you ever feel like, I don't have it together? And it's the peace of God inside of us. When my parents died, they died 2 weeks apart. My dad died, and then 2 weeks later, my mom died. And I was at home when she died, and I remember watching her and the color go out of her face, and everybody's gone. It's all alone. Remember how quiet the house was? And I went over to my dad's old chair and picked up his Bible and just started reading John 14. In my Father's house, let not your heart be troubled. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go to prepare a place for you, I'll come again. That where I am, together. That where I am, there you may be also. But if you drop on down, I kept on reading. If you drop on down to verse 27. Jesus said, these were troubled disciples, see. They didn't understand what was going on. Many times, you may not understand what's going on right now either. Peace I leave with you. My peace I give to you. Not as the world gives. This world will never offer us peace, let me tell you. I don't quite care what kind of agreements we make in this world. There will be not as this world gives do I give to you. Do not let your heart be troubled or let it be fearful. In other words, he's saying you're not alone. Now remember that house that night so quiet. God is here. You're not alone. There's something about that transcends, it says, your thinking. Transcends your thinking. It guards your mind. How do you guard your mind against this worry and anxiety? Let me tell you something I do a lot. When I'm troubled, I go to an old hymn that we used to sing long ago. It goes like this. And I'll just sing this sometimes. Look at it. 'Tis so sweet to trust in Jesus, just to take Him at His word, just to rest upon His promises, and know, thus saith the Lord. And then I'll just relax as I sing, Jesus, Jesus, how I trust Him, how I've proved Him o'er and o'er. Jesus, Jesus, precious Jesus. I like this last phrase, oh, for grace to trust Him more. And then I'll personalize it. I'll personalize it this way. 'Tis so sweet to trust You, Jesus. Becomes my song now. Just to take You at Your word, just to rest upon Your promises, and to know just thus saith the Lord. Jesus, Jesus, how I trust You, how I've proved You o'er and o'er. Jesus, Jesus, precious Jesus. Do everyone need to sing this? Oh, for grace to trust You more. Would you bow your head? And I've asked Laura to just sing that. And why don't you bundle up all your troubles and let's just bring them to Jesus. Most all of you are dealing with some sort of junk, because that's life. Let this be your prayer. Jesus, Jesus. Listen to her as she sings it for us.